will help us as we act in these roles to increase our performance. Firstly, Disong centers are definitely managed in a range of models. Some of them, and the majority of them, are managed by municipalities who take responsibility for that. There are some centers that are managed by provincial government. Chairperson and the members, we are at an advanced stage of work with the GPSA and COGTA, which in the next quarter of this year, we now will serve before Cabinet of a whole institutional review of the program. So I think at a due course we'll be able to come back and share that with members, built also on some of the lessons from this quarterly report that we see. So yes, local government is central to the functioning of that. Building on Tasneem's comment, honourable members, and thank you for your pointed comments. I'm not going to give them to each one. The SASSA issue is not what we want. I mean, it's not the way we would handle it professionally, and I think everybody knows it. But I think on the backdrop of not having any formal policy regulation, I think, honourable members, you know, GCIS, we lead by example, we lead by sometimes wisdom, we hope, sometimes expertise, sometimes research. It's not obligatory. There's nothing in their performance agreements that make heads of communication or spokesperson accountable to the GCIS. However, what I can share with honourable members as the senior official responsible for this, from the onset, we have been doing the rapid response media analysis on a daily basis, working with the lead department to guide them, to give them advice, to assist in the development of key messages. On occasions, that advice has been accepted. On other occasions, like on that Sunday, our advice that we could have handled it ourselves as the chair was not taken. And I'm afraid to say that it's just a fact of the matter. Disciplinary matters, honourable chair, for such colleagues are handled through the line function of that department. And I can assure honourable members we have not left it. But our principle is not to go out and make more fire in the public domain. It's not going to help us as GCIS to issue a statement, as some were calling for, to condemn and criticise, and that it adds fuel to an already tense situation. Our role has been working with a strategic behind-the-scenes role, and I can assure honourable members that matter is not taken down lightly. The issue here at hand, as Tasneem said, once we have a policy that has much more managed result areas, we're going to improve. What I can share with honourable members, as you saw one of the scorecards I shared there, we've had a lot of success in this quarter and this following quarter in getting the coordination forums to work better. In this tenure of myself as the acting DDG here, I've been trying to put working teams together in the four, five cluster areas, but even the sub areas. So for example, this issue of social grants, social media helps us a lot. We use the WhatsApp group very significantly. So for example, we're tightening the manner in which chairs, communication chairs of cluster collaborate on the management of issues. And I must say, if you look at some of the other stories in the last fortnight, we've had quite a successful bringing together of people on that basis. And then lastly, I think on the issue of social media penetration, Taz might elaborate a bit more on that, but from our side, we have a very, very strong program, which is twofold. Some of our team go out regularly to provincial communication forums, as well as the district office of GCIS, to ensure that they are actually setting up websites, setting up social media, WhatsApp groups for rapid response in provinces, etc. So there is a very high take-up of that medium across the different spheres of government into rural areas. I think we'll agree. Obviously, I don't have the stats. DG Norman might be more expert in this specific area of policy, but we are very convinced that social penetration by the cell phone is huge in South Africa, and we are able to reach constituencies with that medium as well. So I'm just going to share those three board questions, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just only two areas that I would like to respond to. Firstly, on the use of personnel budget that we are projecting that the department is underspending, will be underspending. Yes, indeed, that money has been earmarked for compensation of employees as it appears in the appropriated appropriation budget and adjusted appropriation budget. However, Section 43 of the PFMA does allow an institution, a department, to use savings elsewhere to defray treasurer's costs elsewhere. In the past, we could use this money without treasury's authorization. And this is not to say that we would be permanently reducing compensation of employees' budget. No. It is to say that if you have a vacancy that you have a budget for, and for the past 9 months, maybe that vacancy was not filled, what then do you do with that money? So that is the money that you would use to defray the pressure of expenditure elsewhere, not necessarily to permanently take the money out of the budget. So in the past, prior to 16-17 financial year, we could do that. But Treasury, with the current fiscal environment that the country and perhaps other countries in the world find themselves in, they then ring-fenced that amount. GCIS is a very compliant department. We wouldn't have used that money without prior approval from Treasury. We have tried. But I can indicate to you that we are not going to overspend our budget. We still are spending within. So we tried to effect those vehemence within the given mandate, and also only if we were allowed by the authorizing structure. The authorizing structure did not permit it, and we did not. On the management budget, indeed, these are budgets that we management use to travel, to deal with the administration in their areas. And these are budgets that, when they are not used, we tend to take these monies and drive them to the functional programs. So some of them have been fired. If you are a CFO and you have a budget of 50,000, and as at the end of February you still have, let's say, 25,000, that money, it will be taken, it will be used somewhere where there is pressure. So I just needed to indicate that indeed we are quite compliant when it comes to the regulations and the prescripts that are being laid down. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think the other issue that was raised was the issue around the delegation. To what extent do we, as the acting DGs and TDGs, are able to appoint the people below? The delegation of authority allows myself and the other acting DG to appoint up to deputy director level. All SMSs are appointed by the executive authority in terms of those delegations. So in the areas where we've got delegations, we do make the appointment, the necessary appointments, as it were. Thank you so much.
Can we, so that we combine that when we deal with communication, can we get the presentation, and then that question will be dealt with here? Because it covers both the communication and GCIS. If we are going to make a follow-up on that one.
No, I was going to make a follow-up from the CEO's response, Honorable Chair, whether I hear him correct to say they budget for vacancies. They don't appoint, and later on they redirect that money to do other things. As a layperson, can I get the explanation? Because that, for me, creates even more problems.
Can you clarify that?
They don't employ.
Can you clarify that?
With the crisis, they redirect the money later on for the money to do other things, except for what was budgeted for. Because when you talk about the, I thought it's the money that is there for compensation, but now the CFO talks to the money that is there for salaries, in fact, if I got him correct. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Let me explain it well. We are not allowed to have in our establishment posts that are not funded. Posts, when they are funded, they are naturally filled. But because of natural attrition, we do not know when is post one going to be vacant. And when post one is vacant, it will take a number of months, and we know that traditionally in government, it will take 3-4 months to fill that post. So for that, the term that that post has been vacant, that money remains unused. Maybe I did not explain it well. But what I'm saying is that, in fact, GCIS is one of the departments that has been praised for filling its vacancies very, very, very fast. We were a model in one of the MPETs, and we were even used as a case study. So we have a tradition of filling posts. We don't create vacancies that are not filled and redirect money elsewhere. Perhaps I did not explain it well, but what I meant was that for those posts that we are in the process of filling, that money is not due because there was no corresponding headcount. And that is the money that we thought that we could redirect elsewhere, as it is not going to be used. Thank you.
DG, your presentation. And everything else that was raised as questions,
okay,
we'll deal with it when we engage. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think the presentation, I will not deal with the first four slides, which really deals with the structure, the introduction, the strategic goals, because those are self-explanatory. I will start with slide number 5, which...
I think at least this presentation has a thank you. It means it's a complete document.
No, thanks, Chair. Yeah. Just to say that as for the quarter under review, which is as at 30 December 2016, We had planned to achieve 19 targets, and we've been able to achieve 15 of those, and 4 were not achieved. And the majority of these are in Program 2, which is our core, the policy unit, and only one in Program 1 in that regard. The next slide touches on is just a graphic representation wherein the green represents what we have achieved and the red is what we have not achieved, just to show which programs have not achieved all their targets. So, continue. This is just a pie representation in terms of percentage. That 19 targets that we have achieved represent 79%. And 21%, which is the 4, is not what we have been able to achieve. As per your advice, Chair, we move away from using the other color, the yellow color. So it's either is done or not done. So that's how we are reporting to this meeting. On Program 1, Chair, it talks to the MOU, because we do share many of the corporate services functions with the GCIS, as much as we're trying to build our own capacity in that space, but on some areas we're still dependent on the GCIS. For example, the GCI officials, they continue to provide IT and supply chain management support to the department. And I think on the supply chain, during this quarter, we've been able to make progress. We have appointed a director responsible for supply chain and other 4 support staff to support the director. So that function in the next financial year will be doing it fully as a department with the support from the GCIS. We have got 90 funded posts. And out of these, 32 posts are filled and 18 are vacant. In terms of employment equity, 44% of our SMS members are females, and 56% are males. And our disability statistics close to 2%. It's one member in SMS and one member at a junior level. Last year we didn't have a work skills plan. This year we've been able to do, and training programs were conducted as per the work skills plan that's submitted to the Department of Labor. And internal audit projects were conducted and progress reports submitted to the Audit Risk Committee. So we do have a functional Audit Risk Committee, which is chaired by an external person. The reports which talks to the contracts that we have as a department, the one that we transversal contract with CETA, and the memorandum of understanding that we have with CCIS, and the legal instruments and litigations that the department managed to do during this review, we've been able to do those reports as indicated. Going forward is slide number 9. Our financial statements were able to compile this and submitted to National Treasury in line with Section 40 of the PFMA, and 99% of invoices were paid within 30 days, and 98.66% were converted into orders within 48 hours, which is above the 70% that we set for ourselves. I think the 1% that we didn't achieve as the researchers picked up in the report that we provided, talks to two invoices of about which were properly recorded, but that matter has since been corrected. Going forward, those are the two invoices that makes us to achieve that 10% within 30 days. And we have done just of the compliance. Our second quarter performance reports were submitted as required to the National Treasury and DPME, and our second draft annual performance plan was submitted to the DPME for their comments. They have given us their comments, and we have effected that those comments as we finalize the annual performance plan of the department. And outcome 14, which is an outcome that the minister signed with the president, we are expected to play a critical role, especially because of Brenda and the SABC. Those reports were submitted, will form part of the quarterly outcome reports which are presented to cabinet. Those were done and presented appropriately. In slide number 10, which is program 2, we had committed to publish the draft white paper on the audiovisual digital content policy. This matter we couldn't publish because we couldn't find space in the last cabinet cycle. However, it was presented. We presented it to the cabinet in February in this quarter, and we will go back to the next cabinet to make the final presentation to allow us to publish the document for public consultation. The next one is on the CASA amendment bill. We had thought in quarter 3 we will participate in the parliamentary hearings. This target will not be achieved because we had to prioritize the other two bills that we submitted to Parliament, the FPB and the Broadcasting Amendment Bill. But also there is a policy change which is being proposed by the DTPS. As you know, ICASA regulates both telecom and broadcasting and postal matters. In the ICT policy review document, the white paper, they are proposing a split of that regulator to be able to focus on infrastructure-related matters in Antarctica. So there is that process again, which I think needs to be clarified in a certain way. But also from our side, we are also proposing in the audiovisual audiovisual document to have a dedicated content regulator, which will come out of some of the parts that come from the work that ICASA does. So there is that element of it. But for now, you know, until such processes are done, then we'll not be able to achieve the target, even at the end of the financial year. On slide number 11, we had committed to consolidate inputs and presentation of on the paper. This is on the MDDA green paper. This was not achieved. However, there is a chapter that talks to issues of media diversity in the audiovisual document on how they're going to be regulated. Some of the matters which are supposed to be in this document are part of that audiovisual draft white paper that we presented to Cabinet. The next one was on the community media support strategy, and we had committed that by quarter three we'll consolidate on the inputs. And I think we were unable to achieve this. We were able to do this, and the inputs were consolidated, which has led into us having the final workshop with the stakeholders last month. This document is ready to go to Cabinet. On the community radio stations, we promised that we'll support three community radio stations. We've been able to achieve that's the list of the stations that we've supported in providing the infrastructure. On program three, we had committed in this slide that we'll have one digital broadcasting awareness campaign. We have overachieved on this one. We ended up with six awareness programs that we have achieved in the Northern Cape, in KwaZulu-Natal, in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and the Free State. So we've been able to achieve this quite successfully. I think these additional campaigns were as a result of the commitment to ensure that registrations, especially in the borderline areas, are activated, and I must say we've been doing quite well since the allocation that we received from Treasury in the adjustment budget. We had also committed that we'll present progress reports on DTT and on Content Hub at multilateral fora. Indeed, this has been done. This was done in the SADC meeting, which was held in October last year in Ezulwini, and I think we got much traction there. We've been able to achieve that. Next one. Slide number 14. We had committed that we'll do one quarterly report. That has been done. Safe to say that the registration that we recorded on the 30th of December 2016 was 50,000 registrations. And the boxes which are with the post offices at the time were about 668,000. And the accessories, meaning that the satellite dishes and the DTT antennas were also within the supper warehouses. And in terms of installations, I think that for there is just a mistake. 25,000 of households were connected and they were enjoying DTT services. That's the statistics there to say how many people have been connected. Now, I think the statistics that we have currently with the money that we received from the National Treasury, we are now sitting at almost 120,000 households that are have now registered with a sizable number of people now being connected. I think that statistics begins to say to us that where there is money, we are able to meet and be able to raise awareness. And I think we are getting support from the municipalities and also people in the communities from the traditional leaders. They are taking initiative to go and register people in the areas where they can. I think we've been able to make quite useful. So from January to December, March, where we are currently today, we've been able to register 68,000 households, which is more than the period from 2015 till December. So because now we've got money, we can start rolling out most of these campaigns. The next one talks to the issue around our participation in the multilateral fora, and we have done that. We have attended and participated and presented two position papers to the Standing Committee on Copyright and Related Rights in Geneva, which deals with issues about the intellectual rights on the broadcasting and content. Matters. We've been able to do that and present the department quite well. And also we actively participate on the work that is being done to prepare for the World Radio Conference 19 in Khawaroni, Botswana, and subsequently with that we attended other meetings in Kenya. So in that regard. We in this program again, we committed that we'll do one stakeholder engagement. Again, this has been achieved. I think the three stakeholders that we engagement we've had are clearly indicated, in the slide there. Just to indicate that the ITEC meetings. Also, again, just recently we received the delegation from Russia again to give effect to this. ITEC stands for Intergovernmental Trade and Economic Cooperation, agreement that we need to sign as a department. Next slide. Program four for the quarter under review. They were able to achieve all their targets. The first one, collateral analysis was done for all the entities before they submit to the minister and also submitting to parliament. And reports on the governance forums were coordinated during the quarter under review that was done. There was one company secretary forum meeting and one CFO forum meeting which was held. Continue. Then the next one talks to quarter three target on consult entities on the DOC priorities so that we can have alignment of their strategic plans. That has been done. The minister together with the management have met with all the entities under one roof to align our strategic plans. We also committed to do five analysis reports on the second draft APPs. That has been done and inputs were given. It was on the basis of that entities were able to finalize their APPs. That has been achieved. I'll now just do this last slide before I hand over to the CFO to do the financials. Safe to say that the program one spent 97% of its budget and the performance level was at 80%. This is one of the issues that came the last time. Program 2 spent 55% of its budget, performance level is at 40%, and Program 3, 132%, and program is at 100%, and Program 4, 72%, and the performance is at 100%. So that Program 3, I think the CFO will explain, because we do have this DTT program, which is an unfunded mandate, it doesn't have the funds. So we had to find and shift money within the programs to be able to deal with some of the issues. I will now hand over to the CFO to do the financial report of the department. Thank you.
DG. Good afternoon, honorable members. On slide 21 of our report, it shows that the percentage that DG was speaking about, it shows that the total budget for program one was 45 million, and then we have put expenditure per quarter, and at the end of quarter three, we have spent 43 million, which is 97% of the total budget. Program two, the total budget was 8.4 million. We have spent 4.6 million, which represents 55%. Program three was 10 million. We have spent the total expenditure is 18 million. The reason for that, honorable members, you see, we have spent more than what we had is because of all the gizmos that the DG was talking about that happened in program three. And this were done as a result of, we have done the adjustment budget during November. And it was on the understanding that the parliament will pass the bill during November, December, and in quarter three will be covered. Unfortunately, the appropriation budget was only approved in January, which was in quarter four of the process. But I think what is important to honorable members is that, yes, we have received the money in January with this. Like, we couldn't spend more because we were not sure whether the budget will be approved or not. But as we stand now here, as of our figures, we're going to have an underspending in this program of around 10 to 13 million, because it's very impossible to spend large of money in the last 3 months of the financial year, and we just don't want to do fiscal dumping on that one. On the entity side, all the transfers were done to the entities as we speak, so obviously the spending on that program
in my meeting.
Sorry, sir.
What's going on?
It's like they couldn't hear me. They were saying they can't hear what I'm saying.
And they did that not via the chair.
My apologies.
Okay.
Thanks, honorable chair. So the total budget we had as at the end of the quarter three was 1.3 billion, of which we have spent 988, which is 74%. Remember, in terms of the normal straight line projection, we're supposed to be at 75%. So we are at 1% less given the straight norm. But given the current challenges we are facing as a department, I'm saying we have done well. Slide 22 is just a graphical view of the expenditure versus the budget program. And then in slide 23, we are showing the economic classification, which says to us in compensation, we have spent 83%. On goods and services, we are at 128%. Honorable Chair, is because of the 172% I was talking about in Program 3 in the last one for the Izimbizo and other travel arrangements that were done. And the machinery and equipment is at 1,055, and that was as a result of the ministerial car that was bought in the last financial year but was only paid in the current financial year. But that matter has been covered during the adjustment budget, Honorable Chair. And page 24 just give you the economic classification, how we have spent. I don't have to go into that. And the total budget for DOC is 1.3, as I've said. Transfers is 1.2, compensation 59, goods and services only 15 million. And capital was only 84,000. And that shows how underfunded the department is. And if you take all these funds and you take out the transfers that we are operating within, the total operational budget for the department is only sitting at 75 million, including compensation of employees. So it means goods are, budget for goods and services and capital is only 16 million, which in some department could be spent within a month. After the adjustment budget, Chair, our budget moved from 1.345 million to 1.349 million, and this is as a result of 41 million that we have received from ICASA and the 1.2 million of the rollover that we have applied for, hence the movement. Then the programs, we had to do the environment within the program to ensure that there is proper alignment, so that you can see administration move from 45 to 57. Policy from 8 to 7, given the challenges that in some certain policies that they were meant to do, we could see they will never realize those adjustments. So we have done those adjustments, and that was the impact in terms of economic classification after the adjustment budget on slide 27. Chair, that our compensation moved from 59 to 68. And I just want to confirm to say that moving from 5968 doesn't necessarily say we have employed new people. In terms of the plan, the current contract workers that we have employed to do the DTT program, their contracts were coming to an end the end of November. So if this man was not coming, it means this project should have stopped. Their contract should have been terminated by the end of November. But being given the money, that's why we have extended their contract to go with the project until the end of the financial year. So this money was basically given, Treasury increased the compensation of employees to cater for that contract employees to be accommodated in terms of the process. The goods and services was increased from 15 to 45 for the DTT project, and there were no transfers and subsidies that were increased. Payment of capital were increased from 84 to 3.8. In the 3.8, Chair, we are accommodating the new vehicles. Remember in the last quarter I said we have done the cost analysis of the amount we are spending on the rental of vehicles and if we buy the vehicles on our own. So we have now bought the vehicles for the DTT project. And the vehicles are now on, so we will be spending less on rental and whatever for our DTT. The slide 28, Chair, I don't have to emphasize. I think it's basically what I've said. With the limited resources, that is what we have managed to do. But I just want to answer two questions that were asked by the honorable members earlier when they were asking GCIS questions. I think it's the issue of the accountability instrument with ICASA that was not signed. We had a challenge with ICASA in signing the accountability instrument that they wanted a workshop. We did make a workshop, and in the workshop they said to further that they want to meet with the minister before they could sign the accountability instrument. So it's one of the indicators that we are not going to achieve in the current financial year, because the workshop and the meeting will only take place towards the end of this financial year. We said the bilaterals, they couldn't honor the bilaterals, so we are looking at a new date where we can finalize the new one for 17-18. So we are already declaring that for 16-17 financial year, that instrument is not in place, and we are not going to achieve the target. The other question that was raised was the sharing of space, whether there is a quick solution to that. Honorable members, unfortunately, no. In the absence of additional funding coming to the department, we are stuck with the current arrangement we find ourselves within GCIS, which is a very challenging factor, but it's an issue that we are discussing with the National Treasury in our meeting. I'm hoping that the members in the opening, they said they want to meet with Treasury on this matter, so it will be part of those issues that will be discussed. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Members, presentation, but there is tea, coffee. Tea and coffee there. Do you want to break for 5 minutes? The compact break, I even forgot that it's after 12. 5 minutes break, compact break, grab tea, coffee. Something went on tomorrow.
Thank you.
Okay, now we'll start with Honorable Kumbele for questions, and then we go that way. Yeah, honorable members, can we get ready for engaging with the department? Honorable Kumbele.
I think my comment is just general, in the sense that if you look at your programs, it is as a narrative in your programs. But what confuses me is when you report again on performance. For instance, in admin, that program, the words are very big. Program one is about sound system of internal control, resulting in improved service delivery. Those are very big words. When you look at the performance, the progress has got little or nothing to do with it. We report on very small things that are, I want to say, it should be a pedestrian. If you check at your performance, where is my cell phone now? Because I don't see. Same thing applies to program, is it program two? Where is about research and research communication and research, communication policy and research. There, you speak about something that you anticipate following your research, being your policy and legislative strategy. And it appears, you'll correct me, as you go to research, you know what is going to happen before research. Because the program is articulated as its purpose and to develop a strategy, and you know exactly the legislation you're going to produce. In other words, it appears you research for that legislation, or there was a need, or there's a report somewhere to demonstrate the need for that legislation, and as a result of that need, you are conducting a research in order to. That's the kind of clarification I want. Otherwise, those are the few issues I wanted to raise.
Are you, Honorable Kumbele, are you done?
I'm done.
Are you done?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Honorable Fanda?
Thanks, Chair. I'm concerned, let me start with the positive. It seems as if the department is doing well with its spending. It's on track to spend all the money that's been allocated to it. My serious concern has to do with Program 3, which is Industry and Capacity Development, which relates to oversight of state-owned entities. Now, this is the one program where there seems to be gross under expenditure. For all other programs, at 79%, 60%, 80% on track for spending. Here we're at 39.2 spending. And what the story tells for me here is that there does not seem to be any dedication from the department to conduct oversight over its SOEs. They haven't spent the money because that's the story that comes across. They're just not conducting the requisite oversight over the state-owned entities, which is a huge concern, particularly related to what we've just heard about the SABC. So it's a serious, serious concern for me that the department is not spending money allocated to it for oversight on SOEs. So what is the reason for not spending this money? Why haven't you spent this money? Is there oversight happening over the SOEs? If so, what kind of oversight? You also mentioned here that over the next five-year period, the department will measure performance of SOEs through the submission of annual reports and 20 quarterly entity oversight reports, which will be submitted to the executive authority. Is this something that's already happening or something that's going to happen in the future? If it's something that's already happening, when did it start? And I'm asking particularly about the SABC, because that's the entity where there's a lot of problems. So if there are 20 quarterly, if there are quarterly entity oversight reports that were submitted to the minister, could we have sight of those entity reports, particularly related to the SABC? And then my other question about expenditure relates to the minister indicating in the media that she wants to take the ad hoc committee's report on review. Who will be paying for that legal action? Will it be the department? Will the department be paying for that litigation about taking that report on review? And what's the progress with that legal action? Has it begun? If department money is being spent, how much is anticipated will be spent on this legal action? And whether or not it's an amount that will be covered by the department. Thank you.
Chair, I have concerns about the vacancy rate. I see the department has 90 funded positions and 18 are vacant, which gives you a 20% vacancy rate. And I'm really concerned on how that impact on the productivity of the entity. But with regards to that, I would like to know how long these positions have been vacant and what are the company or the entity doing with regards to that to fill these positions.
Which entity has those vacancies?
I'm with the DOC. Are we not busy with the DOC?
Okay, no, that's fine. You were saying the entity. That's the department.
Sorry. Okay. Yes, sorry, I reframed that. Okay, and that's with regards to the vacancy rate. Then on page 12, I applaud the fact that these three community radio stations that will be provided with broadcasting infrastructure. But what I want to know is that where the support stops, or are these radio stations do they also get strengthening? In what other capacity are they being assisted, and is that budgeted for? Because I don't see where it's reflected anyway. Page 14, I have a huge concern around the installations and with regards to the registrations of the DDT with the set boxes. I see that only 50% of these boxes that were registered are actually have been issued and the installations completed. But I would like to know what the time frame is with regards to that. Is there any time frames there? Because this can be an ongoing process that costs South Africa a lot of money, and I don't really see the budget. And somewhere else where it's actually said that there was it was mentioned about the shortage in the budget for DDT. So that raises a huge concern, and I think a lot of people have doubts on how successful this exercise really is. Also, the if you look at the number of STBs that were stored in the post offices, how does that relate to the actual applications, and how does that eventually, the cost, what cost implications does that have on the budget? Then on page 16, I actually just heard Russia somewhere, but I cannot find it in the report here, and I couldn't I couldn't clearly heard what that was about. So if someone can just inform me on that again, and then also on page 21 and 23, the overspending of the budget there again. So it is overspent, and the statistics that's given is 172%, 128%, and 1,555%. Where does that money come from then, if it's overspent? Another thing that maybe I'm not sure if I'm on the right, but with regards to Program 3 and the which has to do with capacity building and also the... Okay, let me leave that first. I'll ask that later. Thanks.
Last round. This is the last round.
I'll leave it with that.
Thank you very much. That there are no further questions. It was good. Nobody's talking. Honorable said, just two issues from the presentation. One is with regard to the, was it 51 million from ICASA? I missed that part. Yeah, that money that came from ICASA, what was it for? The last one is, the second last one is with regard to the issues that ICASA would want to deal with that resulted in us not signing the accountability instrument. These issues that you are saying are going to be handled when they meet with the minister. The much talked about challenge of underfunding. If we were to arrange a meeting with Treasurer and say here is a department with a problem of funding, how much are we talking about? If they were to ask us the question, for this department to be able to execute everything that it's supposed to execute, how will you respond to that question? The mandate of the department, and this last one, I'm raising it from the response by GCIS. I see they have left now. Because their mandate derives from Section 195, which is very clear in terms of what they're supposed to be doing. I was a bit worried when they responded to the question by Honorable Dolashi. I think it was on the interview by the Department of Social Development spokesperson on the issue that is being talked about, the SASA saga, that if you are a department with a mandate and in the process of you executing that particular mandate and you don't have the necessary teeth to bite, surely there is a problem. And I was worried when the response says it's a social development issue, because my take was that surely GCIS should have a stake to be able to follow up on an issue where a person who in my understanding
lodges accountability on the basis of a constitutional right to insist on isiZulu to respond to an issue that is of national interest. And the response says it's a social development issue. When we're talking about a department that is the custodian of government information, I had a problem earlier with that, but nevertheless they have left. But I think acting DG can then be able to assist in with regard to that particular issue. My question is, do we have both DOC and GCIS, do we have teeth to bite in case a department or a municipality is not doing things in line with what it's supposed to be doing, given the mandate that we have been given? There is this issue of 30% ad spend. If a department or municipality is not complying, do we have the necessary teeth to bite as a department? What is it that we are able to do? Because surely we can't dodge responsibility or accountability on the basis of some of the people who are not supposed to be doing, who are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is a small one. Under program 3, the industry and capacity development, I'm impressed with the report that the department is presenting on the fact that insofar as digital broadcasting awareness, almost 5 provinces have been covered. However, I would want to know how the department prioritized provinces in trying to avoid or to be alleged to be doing one province over everyone else. How do we then make sure that your approach to this awareness is going fairly to all provinces? 9 provinces, of course, different by size and everything else. However, how do you make sure that you when you deal with these campaigns or these awareness programs, you prioritize, and that should be something that can be tested so that you don't sit here and say, forever I see you reporting about Mpumalanga, just as an example, on everything, of which there is that allegation already, Chair. How do we make sure that you have a strategy to avoid that, that you are seated in some provinces but not all? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Fandek, I'm saying because I insisted that can you ask a question?
Mr. I do want to ask it if you don't mind. I want to come back on Program 2 where it says that only 55% of the budget was spent and the performance level was 40%. At the end of December 2016, and it reflects on communication policy, research and development. And the reason I mention it is because we had the experience that now with the Film and Publication Board, there was no impact study done beforehand. And that raises a concern by me, because we had to send as a committee, the Film Publication Board, we had to send them back to do the research. And I want to know what the impact is, and it also brings back the question that Honourable Van Dam questioned the oversight. How does the government, the DOC, Film and Publication Board, how is the interaction if a huge thing like the impact assessment that you need to do and actually publish before a bill is put out, and the costs involved in doing that research, how does that impact the budget if you don't do it? And also,
Okay. Just one page 10. Page 10 of the presentation. The first row. Is it a row or a block? Audiovisual and content implemented. Page 10.
That's okay.
Slide 10, whatever. The page. Can you explain to me, because at the end you say the reason for variance and planned action. The white paper was not presented to cabinet as it was postponed to be presented in fourth quarter. It will be presented on 8 February 2017. But as you go to the white paper, next door to that one, draft white paper was not published, and consultation on the draft white paper were not coordinated. Can you explain to us that contradiction so that we are okay? And the last row, same page 10, on the CASA Amendment Act approved and implemented, and then on description of actual achievement, the CASA Amendment Bill was not drafted and finalized for submission to Parliament, as the department is still finalizing the Films and Publications Amendment. That's the one we're doing now, isn't it? And Broadcasting Amendment Bill. Explain to us that, because it seems as if there is a stumbling block there. You can't finish your work. So that the committee can be clear as to the issues you are raising. Do I make sense? And the last one will be if the court order by ETV ruled against the department on the DTT issue, is there any plan to deal with that? Any recourse? Is that clear? The last one, I think these are issues that can be dealt with. Only 100,000 rand only 100,000 set of boxes of 6 million households so far. Do we think we can meet the deadline of 2018 if we run at that pace? And the last question, where is the call center and what is the status in as far as successful installations? Okay, those are the questions.
No, thanks. Let me start by just dealing with all DTT-related questions, including the ones that we've just raised now. Safe to say that this program chair, when it was handed over to the Department of Communications from the Telecoms and Postal Services, it was handed without any funding whatsoever. And also to indicate that the program was only handed formally to the department on the 30th of January 2015. But we did not complain, but we raised these issues. During the process where there was the organization of the department and the moving of functions, DTPS had indicated that there is money allocated for DTT program. That amount was in the region of 120 million rands. 180 million rands, which was for the establishment of the contact center, and another 40 million rands, which was for the awareness campaign. Unfortunately, those funds, by the time we handed over, DTPS indicated that they've
you know, allocated that money for other projects in their department, so they couldn't give us that money. What we then did was to try and engage with the Treasury to get some funding for that, which I think was not successful, you know, in that regard. So the battle that we've been trying to engage with Treasury since then, had we got the 120 million rands at the time of the program being handed over to us, it would have made a huge difference in the situation. So that then leaves the project without being funded at all. The only thing that we received from the department when we have backed them was for them to only release 10 million rand during the 2015-16 adjustment period. We only got the money, 10 million rand, in October. The very same trend as we have also again received money during October, during the adjustment period in October again this year, which does not solve the problem of the funding of the program. I thought I must just indicate that, Chase, that you have got that a bit of a history around this whole project. What we then did was to say we do have a responsibility as a department. There is this program that we've been given, which needs to be implemented for the country, because it's a national project. What then do we do as a department? We then look at, from the little money we have, how do we utilize what we have to get the project moving, which is what we did, including also looking at the possibility of appointing people on contract basis, 12 months contract, to come and assist in the main, because there was no people to do the project. So I think that on its own has helped. You know, going forward, Chair, what we then did together with the CFO, we engaged with our entities, all of them, because we look at various options. I think the CFO will explain further. Where else can we find money within the vault itself? And then we came to realize that ICASA is gonna have an under expenditure, you know, which we discussed and we agreed. And then they allocated that 128 million rands, which the CEO agreed with me to say they can make that money available to us over the MTF period. In June, Treasury gave me a letter that says they agree with that proposal to spread that money over a three-year period, which effectively means that we're going to have 30 million rands more for the year 17, 18, 19, 20, and so on. But Treasury in September, they sent me another letter withdrawing that decision that we have reached. Remember, this money is not a new money. It's the money that is appropriated already. It's in the vote. And ICASA does not need this money. They said this money, ICASA must have it, and all of that. So that's what I think the CFO can explain further around that area. So that's what we did from our side. What they then agreed was only to give us the 41 million rand, in the adjustment, which is only money that we can only use between for this until end of March. So the 41 million rand we must spend within this shortest possible time, but they could not agree with us to spread that money over a longer period so that we can have programs moving and so on. What effectively means is that for the outer years, 17, 18, 19, 20, there's no funding for DTT. And when we engaged with them, they said, I think CFO can, they said, no, don't worry, we'll, so you are likely to have another money coming in the adjustment of budget again. So I think,
so in other words, you say you are unable to spend the 41 million within this period.
Yes, so that's what the CFO spoke about. We've tried to spend the money, But we're going to have an under expenditure of about between 10 to 13 million on the 41 million rand, because it requires us to be on the ground, running campaigns, and all of those things, you know, on the ground. But we've been able to spend the 28 million rand that, you know, that they gave us. That is the remainder of the money that, and I think already they've indicated in the letter that they gave me that they will not be entertaining any rollovers. You know, so that's something we're going to try again to get rollover around that area. So the program remain underfunded, not funded at all, going forward. The question around the provinces, we've adopted a phased approach in the DTT. The first phase was to go to the SK area, the square kilometer area in the Northern Cape, because that is a frequency, quiet zone. That area we have, up to so far, we have cleared that area in terms of the government subsidized boxes. Almost all households are connected and are receiving DTT services. The challenge we have, why we're not switching off that area, is because you still have people who are not subsidized in the subsidized market, and boxes are not available in the market. So, and that's one issue we are engaging with manufacturers to say, make the set of boxes available in that space. Otherwise, if we were to switch on the basis of government subsidized, we can switch off the SK area any time now. Now, we then said we'll then move into the borderline provinces. From there, we move from the SK area, we move into Free State Province, which the team has been resident there in that area. They came back last week, in that area. So they're doing quite very well there because of the borderline with Lesotho. And then from there, the team moved to Mpumalanga, to do registrations because of the borderline with Mozambique. And then as I speak, the team next week, they will be in, the team last week, they were in KwaZulu-Natal province because of the borderline areas again in that area. So from there, we are in Limpopo and then northwest. Then we'll finish off with the Eastern Cape and then Western Cape, and then finish with Gauteng. That's the approach that we have adopted. We have seen, I think, in the last in between January and now, we've been able to register almost 70,000 households because there is money available, and I think with the support we can get to get more money, the 2018 deadline can be positive. Because if you look at, for example, in the Free State, we just go there, we activate. The people themselves, they do the registrations. That's a simple thing. Once that is done, connectivity, it doesn't take long. So we can be able to, 2018 talks about, remember the policy speak about the fact that if we were to switch off, we should have reached about 85% of the population, as it were. So we remain hopeful that we will try by all means to reach the 2018 deadline. Coming to the issue of SASSA, perhaps I can propose that because the acting DG of GCIS has got full account of all of these things that happen between SASSA and how they manage, all the communicators. Perhaps I think I can maybe propose, Chair, that we ask him to provide a report to the committee on what kind of interventions he has made. But he informed me that he did not just sit, but he intervened in that space. But I think he can give you the facts on what really happened, up to a point where even the Minister of Public Service Administration intervened in the previous one, where he indicated that I think the department needs to deal with such kind of conduct in government. So maybe if I can propose, Chair, he can maybe give you a report around that issue on how he handled the issue of SASSA, and so in that way. The other issues about Russia, I was referring, I made reference to it because I spoke about the ITEC, the Intergovernmental Trade and Economic Cooperation. I made it as an example to say just recently, last week, we were hosting the Deputy Minister of Russia to on the ITEC program to deal with the issues of communication and mass communication in that space. It was just an example around that honourable member. The other issue is the support to the community radio stations. Remember the what we have done on the community radio stations. We have now handed over this function completely to the MDDA. Because it doesn't make sense for us to continue as a department to roll out the program. So MDDA is running this. So it provides support on training. It provides support on program production. So when the stations are supported here, they get other support from the MDDA, you know, as it were. So ours was only to focus on the MDDA. So the monies that we allocated, I signed an MOU with the CEO of MDDA, where that money will be transferred to the MDDA so that MDDA can use it, because that is their competence in terms of rolling out the infrastructure. That has been done, you know, all the money that, you know, going forward. I think my colleague will deal with the issue of the vacancy rate and how this committee becomes vacant. And then my colleague will also deal with the issue of the oversight work that we do. Then I will come back to deal with the questions from Honorable Gungwele and Honorable Van Damme and close. Thank you.
Just before that, members, we'll have to finish the meeting because we also need to adopt our report for tomorrow, the interim board report. So please, if you can communicate with your leaders, so that even if it's we go back after two to the house, it's known that we're finishing a very important business. Thank you very much. CFO?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Firstly, let me answer the question from Honorable Van Damme. Program 3 is not entity oversight, Honorable Member. Program 3 is industry and capacity development, and that's where DTT is stationed. Program 4 is the one that is dealing with entity oversight, and if we look at page 21, it has spent 72%. The 55% was only spent on program 2, which is communication policy research and development. And I think that is the area where the chairperson has asked the DG to explain the issue of the ICASA, the films and publication, because that is where the policy resides in terms of performance. But over and above that, if we look at the page 5 of the report, it says in terms of entity oversight, there were 4 targets for the quarter that were supposed to be achieved, and all those 4 quarters were achieved for the quarter. Honorable Member has requested that we submit the reports that we do on the analysis for the Minister. We will gladly do so, Chairperson. Those reports are available. And as such, for sure, I don't have to answer why the money is not spending, because part of the money that is sitting in program, I'm referring to the presentations that we have done to the department from the department on page 21. That's where the program 4, which is entity oversight, has spent 72% of its budget. And basically, the main money that is sitting there is transferred to all the entities. So the money that is sitting there for support, it's minor money for salaries and for meetings that we facilitate and for the sessions that we have with the entities on strategic planning, on the CFOs forum, CEO's forum and the company secretary's forum that deals with that element. So as such, the analysis on quarterly basis is done when they submit reports for the minister, and that report will be made available for the members of the committee to look at. The DG will respond to the issue of the ad hoc committee expenditure matter. It's not my space for sure to deal with that one. The quarterly reports, Honorable Fanami, they've been done. We have them for the entire year. So we'll give quarter one, quarter two, and quarter three reports as you suggested. Then the other question that was asked that I need to deal with is where does the money come from? I think it was asked by Honorable Fandek on the over expenditure. I've said that during the adjustment budget, we have received the money for DTTT. So as such, we had to do the requirement of our money internal to make sure that we cover those areas that were under overspending in other programs. Because DTT, 41 million that came, was earmarked for DTT money, so you can't use it for any other thing. So the other money, like program 2, which was underspending, we had to do requirement to make sure that we can accommodate those other programs that are overheating in terms of performance. So the environment were part of the adjustment budget that was approved by the House in February when the adjustment budget was approved. The other issue that was asked is how much do we need if the meeting with Treasury has to continue. Chair, we can submit to the committee the draft document that we have submitted to Treasury when we were requesting funding for the department. And it's very difficult to say how much do we need when we have unfunded mandates to look at. But what we have done, we said, if DOC has to be looked as a newly established department, what does it require to have it's established properly, and those were the basic costs that we have done for the cost for the establishment of a new department, and we will forward that question we have done because it's in relation to building IT and the structure that we have. The 90 posts we are referring to is only the funded one that we have done, and we have only done that based on the available funds we have. But if you look at the entire organizational structure of the organization, we are far below in terms of making sure that we achieve what we are supposed to do as a department. So we will submit to the committee all the questions we have done in relation to what is the basic amount we need for us to run the department. The last issue that I had to deal with is thanks, Chairperson. I think I've answered all the questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members. I will respond to the first question regarding the objective of Program 1 and the report. And I believe the problem might be us wanting to report on a high level. But in terms of the objective itself of maintaining a sound system of internal controls, there is a lot that goes in because it talks about the policies, the plans, the standard procedures that are covering HRM and development, finance, wellness, supply chain management processes. It also goes into the internal structures that we have to have and ensure that they are working. Your committees, like your budget committees, you have to have your HR committees, you have to have your internal audit committees. Those are the controls that we're talking about here that we thought in this report, if we can go into details and put them here. We also talking about the planning, the monitoring, and the evaluation processes of the departmental performance. So those are the issues that we're talking about when we talk about this objective. And in terms of the vacancy rate, these vacancies have been vacant since the establishment of the department. We had started filling the posts, as you can see that we have at least those other posts that are filled, 72 at the end of quarter three. But we had to stop filling posts because we had to employ contract employees in the DTT space. So the money that is for those vacancies had to finance those contracts, and because we were not given more funds to employ people in the DTT space. And the impact that it has, most of these posts are in the corporate services space. So I believe the MOU between GCIS and DOC has really assisted us in cushioning the employees that are there. I think those were the two questions.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to deal with the rest of the questions. There was the question that you raised around the judgment, the judgment that we are awaiting in the Constitutional Court. We went to the Constitutional Court to give us a declaratory order regarding the inclusion of the encryption system in the government subsidized box. Because our view is that that box is meant to ensure that the most vulnerable, the poorest of the poor, are able to continue to receive broadcasting services. If the decision goes either way, the policy, remember, it's not setting aside the entire policy amendment, but is to deal with the question around that very same issue of inclusion of the encryption. But if the decision goes ahead, you know, either way, it may that the boxes, even if they're there, they have to be upgraded. When you do that, you can do that over the air. In any case, you must connect them for them to be able to be upgraded over the air. So it doesn't make any difference, really, in terms of the box that we have, either way. Then the other question that we're supposed to deal with is the question about the ad hoc committee report taken for review, and whether the process began. I think this is the process that is being handled in the ministry. I'm not privy to the documentation, whether that has been lodged already in the courts in which it was the minister taking that matter to the courts. And also from my side as an accounting officer, we have not processed anything that talks to any financial pay or payments from that side. So it will be carried by the ministry around that aspect. The last issue that you raised was around on page 10, around the clarity that you are seeking around the two targets. What we said, Chair and members, that we had planned to publish the draft white paper for consultation. The process in government is like that before any policy, because it cuts across many departments, is published, it has to go to cabinet for us to publish it for public in a gazette. So what we are saying here is that when we say the draft white paper was not published, it's because we were unable to get approval from cabinet.
not because cabinet did not approve at the time. It was because we could not find space in the cabinet in that quarter, because the last cabinet meeting that we submitted was full. Therefore, they said you can only present it in the first cabinet meeting of 2017, which was on the 8th of February, which we did make the presentation. So ours was just to get approval from cabinet so that we can publish it, so that we can consult with the stakeholders on what we are proposing in that document. On the second one, we had thought the ICASA bill would have been processed, and just to clarify, we had to, because of the capacity we have, we had to prioritize, because the same team that is working on the ICASA amendment bill has to be the same people who are going to be participating here in Parliament on the FPB amendment and the broadcasting amendment bill. So we then had to reprioritize and focus on finalizing assist and working with Parliament to finalize those two bills. That's what it means, the clarity that I think I can provide around that area. Hence, we did not do the ICASA amendment bill as promised. Don't know whether I'm missing another question. I think I've tried to. Do we have teeth to bite? Yes, this is what was asked. The GCIS and DOC don't have those teeth. And the policy that we're working on, hopefully if it goes to cabinet and approved, it will give the GCIS the right to intervene when certain things are not happening properly. The same with the issue of the 30%. It has been a cabinet decision for years now. But you hardly see municipalities advertising on community media. They advertise in the mainstream. So this policy that we're working on probably will assist us to be able to give to force municipalities and departments to advertise using community media. But the GCIS, I think, maybe again, because they've got bulk media buying capacity, they can provide a report on how much they're spending on community media, on the money that they're spending on monthly basis. But thank you very much, Shepherd.
I think let's thank the department members for the responses, both communications and GCIS. I think if we had more time to spend with one of the departments, we would be doing justice. As I said, we have to look at our program so that we don't load our program because of the time we have. Only how many hours? Is it three? Only 3.5 hours. That's not enough even to spend with one department. So we'll have to draft our program so that we do justice. Members, those are the responses, and I want to proceed, because we have a lot in our agenda, to the next item. And the next item is the adoption of the report recommending candidates for appointment to the interim board of SABC. But there is one hurdle that we'll have to pass. One obstacle that we have to overcome, and that obstacle is what we left hanging in our last meeting. And we deliberately said in our last meeting that the last urgent meeting, that will have to be very meticulous in terms of the act. And we checked everything. The ad says to us, if you can pull the ad says to us, we must appoint, we must come up with 5 names for the interim board that will have a life of not more than 6 months. I think we have done that. We finalized the issue of names of 5 people. What we didn't do what we shared for this meeting was to agree as the committee on the appointment on the issue of the chairperson of the interim board and the deputy from the five that we agreed upon. And I think I will really don't want us, because I think the Honorable Kalako and other parties did a lot of good work in terms of the five delegates. And I will ask Honorable Kalako to give us the names of the two that we'll propose tomorrow, but they must be in our program of the two, the chairperson and the deputy. And I think we don't have to spend time on this one because it's everything is in place in terms of the names of the people. We are all of us very happy with the people that we came up as the political parties. Honorable Kalako.
Chair, out of the five, we'll propose Ms. Kweyama as a chair. That is Kanyesile Kweyama as a chair, and Mr. Mandata Tsitu as a deputy chair.
Can I hear the seconder on those names? Honorable Sedi.
Thank you. I second the proposal from Honorable Kalako.
Members, those are the names, and I think we agree, all of us. I hear the nod of approval from everybody. So we'll have to go to the report, and the report will reflect those names of the proposed chair and deputy.
Chair, on the, I'm sorry about this, on the, now that we have concluded the issue of the interim board, I really want to request the committee to find time to interact with the department, with the minister in particular, with that report. I hear that there might be delays until that is being officialized. I think let's plan our meeting such that we have a close interaction about the report of the ad hoc and the shareholder, who is in this case the minister. Because we don't have a lot of time. The 6 months is very short on the work that has been presented by the ad hoc committee. So that by the time that 6 months elapsed, at least a lot of ground should have been covered insofar as correcting the ills of the SABC. That will be my humble request, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Honorable members, I will now present the report that will be our report as the committee, portfolio committee, to the House tomorrow. Honorable Kumbela.
I propose this adoption, Chair.
I want to read it.
I thought I read it. Okay. Read it.
Did we read the reports last week? Short of the two names. All right. Okay. Honorable members, the report was read last week without the chair and the deputy. And now the report is with the chair and the deputy. And members agree that because we read the report, last week without the chair and deputy, we adopt the report together with those names. Honorable Kumbel?
I request that we put it differently and say without the appointment of the chair and the deputy. It can be interpreted to mean that those two names were not there. That's my worry. We will say without the chair and the deputy.
Honorable Fanda. Oh, I thought you were raising Honorable
Chair, I think it's not a trench match. It won't take time, that much time. I think let's just read the whole report and so that is recorded as such. Let's do that.
Yeah, no, I think my life is saved. Because I thought members, this is the report. Maybe let me read it. Report of the Portfolio Committee on Communications on the resolution of the National Assembly to dissolve the South African Broadcasting Corporation, dated 14th March 2017. The Portfolio Committee on Communications, having considered the resolution of the National Assembly to dissolve the South African Broadcasting Corporation, reports as follows. This is the report for tomorrow. On the basis of the dissolution last week. On 5 October 2016, the committee resolved that an inquiry into fitness of the SABC board to hold office in terms of Section 15, capital A of the Broadcasting Act 4 of 1999 was necessary. Following the resolution of the committee, the National Assembly established an ad hoc committee on the SABC board inquiry to inquire inter alia into fitness of the SABC board to discharge its duties as described in the Broadcasting Act number four of 1999 and any other applicable legislation. The ad hoc committee on SABC board inquiry recommended to the National Assembly, that the SABC board be dissolved and that an interim board be appointed. On the 7th of March 2017, the National Assembly adopted the recommendation of the ad hoc committee on SABC board inquiry. The committee had began with the deliberations on interim boards of the SABC on 24 January 2017 and agreed that on the criteria to select the interim board members, among other things, candidates should possess in-depth knowledge of the Broadcasting Act, legal expertise and experience in dealing with human resources, and since the process of the appointing an interim board does not require advertising and interviews, different parties must come up with names to be deliberated on and finalized by the committee. On 14 February, meaning today, the committee met and parties submitted the proposed names. 14 February, not today. Proposed names of candidates as follows. The ANC submitted the names of Matata Tsedu, Rachel Kalidas, David Nidri, Krish Naidu, Phoebe Potgieter, Kubule, Sulungeka Dazana, Kanyisile Kweyama, and Mr. Steve Mutale. The DA submitted the following names: John Matheson, Ms. Tanya Bosch, Pumelelo Mkabela, Jack Devnarian, and Mr. Michael Markovitz. COPE, on behalf of smaller parties, submitted the following names: Mr. Moses Moraladi, Olisa Mbeqeka, Dumile Mateza, Ms. Pearl Luthuli. Committee agreed to afford the economic freedom fighters an opportunity to submit names through the committee secretary on 8 March 2017. EFF submitted the following names: Thabo Khwinana, Advocate Mujangu Gumbi, Mr. Matata Tsedu. On 8 March 2017, the committee deliberated on the names and recommends to the House that the following candidates be recommended. We'll have to change the date. On March 14, 2017, because this is what we did last time. On 14 March 2017, the committee deliberated on the names and recommends to the House that the following candidates be recommended for appointment to the interim board of the SABC. And the names are Ms. Kanyisile Kweyama, Mr. Krish Naidu, Mr. Matata Tsedu, Mr. John Matheson, Mr. Phoebe Potkhidas, and further agreed that the chairman of the board or chairperson of the board, interim board, be Ms. Kweyama Kanyisile and the deputy, Mr. Matata Tsedu. The report is tabled to the National Assembly for adoption or for resolution, for consideration by the National Assembly, and that must be reflected in the report for consideration by the National Assembly. That's how the report goes, honorable members, with the last amendment that talks about the report is tabled to Parliament for consideration.
Okay. Anything
that we missed in the report? There is nothing. What we need now is to get the to adopt the report, and then we need the person who would move for the adoption. Honorable Fanda, don't know whether you're thinking or want to adopt. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. So after, I'm just trying to understand what the process is so that we don't have any more delays.
Yeah.
So after the adoption in the House, then the President has 10 days within
yes.
which he must
appoint.
Can we include a line in the report about? No, actually, never mind. It's fine. I'll include that in my speech about the urgency of the matter.
Yeah.
And then, can we then, as a committee, decide on a date when the minister and the interim board will appear before us before we go away on oversight and constituency period?
The biggest problem, members, we don't know when the President will appoint the interim board because he has that 10 days. Unless, because, I mean, it will be difficult to... We're going for oversight on the 27th. And this will be adopted tomorrow, meaning the 15th. So it's going to be very difficult to come up with a date. Yes.
Maybe, Honourable Chair, maybe let's leave the rest to your office, who will obviously be available as and when you need us to come and take the process forward once everything has been finalized. It might be a bit of a challenge for us now to agree on a particular date for us to reconvene. My submission is that let's leave that to your office.
I think let's agree. I think let's emphasize even when we debate the agency of the President to appoint this. I think we are free to do so. Even those who are going to speak from the committee, from whichever party, must emphasize that. And then immediately after the appointment of those people, we'll then convene an urgent meeting with the board. Matters in those recommendations, they need speed, and I think we must have that spirit. I think that is fine, Honorable Van Damme. Now what is left is to adopt the report. Any mover for the adoption? Honorable Machoba.
Thank you, Chair. I'm moving to adopt the report.
Honorable Machoba moves for the adoption of the report. Seconded by? Honorable Tolash, can you?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I second the adoption of the report too. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. On this one, I think we're done. I think we've closed all the... What is left now is minutes.